Support for IPR comes from Corridor Vein Center and Corridor Aesthetics, treatment for varicose veins and spider veins, also providing facial rejuvenation services and treatment for moderate to severe acne. More at Corridor Vein and CorridorAesthetics.com.
It's River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer, today with my co-host, IPR State Government reporter Katarina Sestarek at the State House Law Library. Hi, Katarina.
Hi, Ben.
Today, looking at several measures advancing in the Iowa legislature related to reproductive health, just to before Katarina gives us some more details. In brief, one bill requiring schools to show students a video about the stages of pregnancy, another extending postpartum Medicaid coverage from 6 weeks to a year after birth, limiting eligibility, though. A Iowa House vote last week to increase penalties for killing, quote, an unborn person. In just a moment, Katarina and I will be talking to a practicing OBGYN in our state. Later in the program, Iowa lawmakers from both sides of the aisle. But first, Katarina, more details on these bills. Let's talk about what has been called the Baby Olivia bill. And before you give us some more details on that, let's hear a little bit of an audio clip from it. This is a 3-minute video produced by Live Action, a self-described pro-life organization, showing an animation of a developing fetus with narration that starts the video off by saying, "While she has yet to greet the outside world, baby Olivia has already completed an amazing journey." The narration continues.
"This is the moment that life begins. A new human being has come into existence. At fertilization, her gender, ethnicity, hair color, eye color, and countless traits are already determined. She begins to implant in the uterus about 1 week after fertilization. Her cells organize into what we call an embryo. At 3 weeks and 1 day, just 22 days after fertilization, Olivia's heartbeat can be detected."
Little excerpt from this 3-minute video. Katarina, tell us more about the bill that references this video.
Right. So Republicans in the Iowa House passed a bill that would require fetal development education in schools starting in seventh grade. And the bill would specifically require showing a video that is similar to this video that's called Meet Baby Olivia that you just played a clip from, that is produced by an anti-abortion organization. And so this has been controversial because there are many people who would disagree with some of the ways that things are portrayed in the video, with, you know, certain characteristics that are ascribed to the fetus as it's shown developing in this animated video. But ultimately, you know, supporters of the bill say that they hope it would influence Iowa kids' decisions later in life when they're making decisions about whether to continue a pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Zero in a little bit more on the controversy surrounding this video. And we heard a part there where the video shows the sperm reaching an egg, the narrator saying, "This is the moment that life begins. A new human being has come into existence." Is that sort of the crux of the controversy surrounding this?
Yeah, that's a big part of it, because opponents will say, you know, that's kind of based on someone's religion and personal beliefs, the idea of when life begins or when an embryo is a person. All those things can be very personal, someone's personal beliefs. And for something like that to be played in, you know, a public school, for example, opponents of it say that's pushing a religious or political agenda on kids in school.
Yeah, in just a moment, we'll hear the opinion of an MD, a health professional here on this. But tell us the current status of this bill.
It passed in the House, and it has a subcommittee scheduled in the Senate for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The second of these reproductive health bills we're touching on this hour, one that would extend postpartum Medicaid coverage. Tell us more about that.
This year, this has been considered in the legislature for a few years, but Governor Kim Reynolds made it one of her priorities this year. So it would extend the duration of Medicaid coverage after giving birth from the current 2 months to a full year. Iowa would become one of the last states to do that. And it would also cut eligibility by lowering the income ceiling significantly, so fewer people would qualify for coverage under this bill as well.
And last week, you reported how the Iowa House voted to increase penalties for killing, quote, an unborn person. Tell us more about that.
Right. So this is something that Democrats have raised big concerns about because of what we've seen happen in Alabama in recent weeks, where the Alabama Supreme Court ruled that frozen embryos being used for IVF were children and had the same rights as children, and that paused IVF procedures in the state. And because this bill would change the criminal penalties for non-consensual termination of a pregnancy and change the language to killing an unborn person, has raised concerns that could be used to challenge IVF procedures in the state. That unborn person definition is already in Iowa code and could potentially be used in that way as well. But obviously this issue has a lot of attention right now, and Republicans say that it's not their intent to do anything to IVF, but that doesn't mean it can't be used in a lawsuit in that way.
Mm-hmm. And the current status of that bill?
That has passed in the House and has not passed the Senate.
Okay. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100 or rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org is our email. Joining us now, Dr. Emily Bavers of Waverly. Dr. Bavers, a doctor of obstetrics and gynecology. Dr. Bavers, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for being with us. Let's talk first of all about what is called the Baby Olivia Bill. You, I understand, are very familiar with the bill and the video. As a doctor of obstetrics and gynecology, we value your view on this. This is a bill that would require schools to show students a video about the stages of pregnancy in seventh grade through high school, though not necessarily this exact video. Let me have you listen to the House bill's floor manager, Republican Representative Ann Osmundson of Volga, gave these comments before lawmakers passed this bill on a vote of 59-35 that was on February 28th.
People talked a lot about the Olivia video. For one, it is offered unbranded. Also, it is not required. It is simply a suggestion. You've talked about it being inaccurate. It has been reviewed and endorsed by several medical experts. Science educators across the nation have endorsed this video. The bill ensures the teaching to our children of basic facts about human development in a very approachable way. This is scientific information. This is teaching basic biology to our children, and it helps to answer one of life's biggest questions, where did I come from?
Dr. Bavers, as a doctor of obstetrics and gynecology, what would you say about the accuracy of this video, the scientific foundation of it?
Well, I appreciate any effort to improve the sexual education of our youth. ACOG, which is the organization that obstetrician gynecologists belong to, supports comprehensive sex education, but we believe it should be medically accurate and evidence-based and age-appropriate. Oftentimes, there is not a one-size-fits-all to how to best educate a population of students. And for that reason, oftentimes, it is left to the discretion of the teacher who will be educating a class. For example, a seventh grade class may need different education than a 12th grade class. The video in question, the Baby Olivia video, deviates from what we would consider the medical norm by dating the pregnancy from post-fertilization age rather than post-last menstrual period age. This is a difference of approximately 2 weeks. And in doing so, the Baby Olivia video suggests that these milestones of human development occur approximately 2 weeks earlier than what would be the normal language around this in like a clinical situation or how most women talk about their pregnancies. And so this is kind of misleading for young people who maybe don't have other experience with talking about pregnancies in a medical situation. Mm-hmm. Additionally, when they talk about those milestones, they give some kind of sentiment to them. They talk about the fetus playing in the womb or yawning or trying to speak. While it's true that fetuses do make lots of motions in utero, none of them really are ever indicated or proven to be play. You know, these are spontaneous motions that are driven by a neurologically immature system. I don't think that we can say that the video is evidence-based in that way.
Mm-hmm. So what is being purported to be scientifically based or accurate is within also the medical community a matter of opinion on when this life begins or what is characterized as happening in the womb?
You're exactly right. Just like any other population, there is disagreement in the medical community about a lot of things. And no population within medicine has decided definitively when life begins. There's no medical definition of this. And different people will interpret the movements of a fetus differently, but we can't, you know, say definitively what is play or what is a fetus trying to speak versus what is a fetus just moving their mouth. Again, when we talk about how, you know, we envision our children being educated, I think sticking to the facts and making sure that the information we provide to children is accurate, evidence-based, and unbiased is really important.
Okay, we'll be back with Dr. Emily Bavers of Waverly, a doctor of obstetrics and gynecology. Katarina has a few questions for Dr. Bavers, and also we'll talk about the other reproductive health measures, proposed changes in Iowa law when we return. If you'd like to join our conversation this hour, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Ben Kiefer with Katarina Sestarek. It's a Legislative Monday. We'll be back in just a moment.
Support for this IPR podcast comes from Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to causes they care about. Details on the Endow Iowa Tax Credit Program at communityfoundations.org.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer with my co-host this hour, IPR's Katarina Sestarek at the Statehouse Law Library. And joining us for this portion of the program, Dr. Emily Bavers of Waverly. And we're talking about reproductive health measures, proposals at the Statehouse. Dr. Bavers, your view on what Katarina described there a moment ago. Last week, the Iowa House voting to increase penalties for killing, quote, an unborn person, raising some current concerns among Democrats, especially about in vitro fertilization. This has a similar theme to what is, it seems, raised by the Baby Olivia bill about, you know, when there is a person there. And what is your view on this increase of penalties and what I guess would be the definition of an unborn person?
Yeah, well, this is a very, again, a complex question. And as Katarina pointed out, this is something that people may feel personally different about. And I'd like to just acknowledge that that's okay. I think that we are all entitled to our personal feelings. But legally defining a fetus or an embryo as an unborn person has a lot of clinical implications for the practice of obstetrics and gynecology. I'll just bring to attention again that the American College of Obstetrician Gynecologists, which is the professional organization that OBGYNs work within, really opposes efforts by states to define an embryo or a fetus as a person. And the reason for this is that as obstetrician gynecologists, while we recognize that we are often caring for, you know, two entities, both maternal and fetal entities, our primary obligation and our primary patient must remain our maternal patient. And giving an embryo or a fetus the same scope of rights as the maternal patient really jeopardizes the lives and health of these patients. So while this particular bill in the legislature is intended to be, you know, a non-consensual death of a fetus or somebody that, you know, terminates an unborn, quote, unborn person or a fetus without the consent of the pregnant person, really changing the law in this way will have downstream effects for the care of women in our state.
Mm-hmm. Last month, the Alabama Supreme Court made big news, ruling that the frozen embryos are children, have a right to life, could have led to homicide charges for in vitro fertilization clinic employees who discard leftover and unviable embryos. So clinics stopped pending some further legislation, stopped offering some fertility services. Do you see a similar situation at all, possibly, should this bill advance?
Absolutely, because even if you offer some sort of immunity for the medical provision of in vitro fertilization, there are too many things about pregnancy that cannot be predicted. There are too many different conditions that can occur in pregnancy that are too complicated to legislate. And so, for example, women in pregnancy frequently use medications that have very limited data on their safety in pregnancy. Most of our medications have not been studied in pregnancy because of federal restrictions on the inclusion of pregnant women in research. For this reason, we oftentimes are using medications that theoretically could harm a pregnancy, but have not been known to cause harm on a regular basis. What will happen if we're using medications, for example, to treat Crohn's disease in pregnancy or to treat diabetes in pregnancy or high blood pressure in pregnancy, and the death of a fetus or embryo occurs? We won't be able to say that this was a consensual death of a fetus, and could a physician face criminal prosecution for this? Again, there are too many complicated things that occur in pregnancy, particularly as we have an aging and a less healthy pregnant population, that this law will have unintended consequences for the women of Iowa.
Dr. Emily Bavers is an OBGYN from Waverly. We have you for a few more minutes before you have to go. Dr. Bavers, let's talk about your view. Have you give us your view on this proposal to extend postpartum Medicaid coverage from 6 weeks to a year after birth, really Iowa catching up to most of the other states in this, but also lowering the income ceiling for those eligible. Your view?
Well, I'm so delighted to see Iowa picking up this 12-month extension. As you note, we're behind the times, and it's a great win for our patients. In the postpartum period, a lot of things and a lot of complications of pregnancy occur in the first 12 weeks or so postpartum. But some notable outliers are mood disorders and substance use disorders, which oftentimes take longer for patients to struggle with. Extending postpartum Medicaid gives patients the opportunity to continue counseling, to continue group work about substance use disorders, and to really support them in that first year postpartum where a lot of different changes take place. That being said, Iowa will be the first state and the only state so far to lower the eligibility threshold while also extending this. And this will leave a good portion of women in Iowa without pregnancy coverage. Now, if you think about what, you know, how things are right now, our pregnant patients are eligible for coverage up to 375% of the federal poverty level, which you might think that sounds very generous. But that's just $117,000 a year for a family of four. And so really, if you think about, again, in an economy where things cost very much, the cost of housing, the cost of daycare, the cost of food, $117,000 goes very quickly for a family of four. Lowering it to 215% would really leave a lot of people without coverage or paying out of pocket for pregnancy care. Really, how this would likely translate is that they don't get adequate prenatal care. They maybe have worse pregnancy outcomes. They may have worse infant health. Now, here in Iowa, we had a marked increase in the last year in our infant morbidity mortality, 30%, the highest of any state in the nation. And so while I applaud the legislators' actions to extend the postpartum coverage to 12 months, I think it's really important to not set ourselves back by decreasing the eligibility without some sort of safeguard in place for these patients.
Dr. Bavers, thank you for joining us today. Unless you had anything unmentioned that you'd like to put in here before we say goodbye, I know you have to go. We'll say goodbye. All good?
Thank you so much.
Dr. Emily Bavers of Waverly, Doctor of Obstetrics and Gynecology. It's River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer with my co-host this hour, Katarina Sestarek. And let's go to a guest who is with Katarina at the State House Law Library live. Senator Janet Peterson, a Democrat from Des Moines, sits on the committees that include the Health and Human Services. Senator Peterson, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We want to note, too, that as we discuss, especially the baby Olivia bill, Republican House lawmakers did not return requests to speak on this program about which is House File 2617, the baby Olivia bill, including its floor manager. We heard a clip from Representative Osmundson just a moment ago. Katarina, I'll hand it over to you to talk a little bit about this with Senator Peterson.
Sure. So, Senator Peterson, Democrats have opposed the bill to require this fetal development education, and specifically a video similar to the baby Olivia video in all schools in Iowa. Why do Democrats oppose this idea?
Well, Democrats believe that our children deserve medically accurate sex education in schools, and we do not believe that politicians should be pushing medical misinformation in our schools.
Is there, do you oppose the overall idea of having fetal development education as part of sex education? Do you think there's a better way that this could be done, I guess?
Well, national sex education standards don't recommend viewing ultrasound as part of a comprehensive, medically accurate sex education curriculum. So, no, I don't support it.
What about just other changes to, I guess, human development education? You know, what would you recommend if you got to choose that, I guess?
Well, we're seeing some really alarming trends coming out of the state legislature right now. One other thing that they did was made sure that children don't have access to learn about the HPV vaccination, which can help prevent cancer and is showing amazing results. And we believe that our children should be equipped with health education information that will help them lead healthy, productive lives. We also believe in expanding family planning services in our state, and that's another thing that Republicans have really helped pull away access from Iowans of all ages.
If this bill were to pass and get signed into law, the bill doesn't necessarily require the baby Olivia video to be shown. Do you think it would be possible that schools would be able to find other resources that, maybe do have information that's more scientifically agreed upon and that it would end up being okay? Or do you think that just the bill having that baby Olivia video written in it is going to cause problems?
You know, I really think extremists at the State House should be staying away from setting curriculum for our public schools and our school children. We're also seeing them attack the AEAs this year, which is one of the services that our schools used for making sure that they have great curriculum in our school buildings.
Is there any sort of requirement for fetal development education that you would support?
You know, safe, medically accurate, evidence-based sex education in our schools is something I believe every Democrat supports here at the State House.
Senator Peterson, let's have you react to a little audio clip that we have. This is Polk County Moms for Liberty Treasurer Amber Williams spoke in favor of this fetal development bill during a January 30th subcommittee hearing, saying she would have benefited from this instruction before she got an abortion at the age of 18.
Personally, I wish I would have been subjected to this curriculum starting in first grade all the way through my senior year. Because by the time I was 18, I knew more about choice than I did about life. I would have known that at 10 weeks gestation, the baby I was about to abort had nearly 1 billion cells, could suck her thumb and swallow, grasp an object, touch her face, sigh, and stretch. The staff over at Planned Parenthood didn't share that information with me. Had I been shown the video, Meet Baby Olivia, which actually follows the science of the incredible journey of life beginning at conception, I would have chosen life.
Okay, I don't know how old Amber Williams is now, but going back into her earlier life at the age of 18 when she says she had an abortion. Senator Peterson, do you see she's making a valid point there about informing young women about this sort of thing?
Well, I believe all of our students deserve access to safe, medically accurate sex education curriculum. And Moms for Liberty, along with other groups that are pushing this video, are pushing an extremist agenda mandating medical misinformation in our schools.
Mm-hmm. How should this pass? How would Iowa then, line up with other states in with similar measures or not having such measures? Do you know?
Well, at the end of January 2024, there were 7 states that had introduced legislation that would require students to watch this mandated misinformation.
Mm-hmm. And in the debate about this or conversation with other lawmakers, do you take into account how different faiths see when life begins? It varies depending on faiths. Is that part of the conversation or is it solely focused on the science here?
Well, I believe in reproductive justice in our state. And, Republicans have listened to medical experts talking about that this video is mandated misinformation and they've continued to ignore them. We have real problems in our reproductive health care system in Iowa, and I believe we should be addressing those instead of continually to focus on these extreme pieces of policy legislations that Republicans keep putting forward.
Mm-hmm. Let's have you react to an email from Amy in Iowa City who's listening. Amy writes, as an embryologist, I am responsible for culturing and possibly freezing and later thawing embryos. These embryos are comprised of 60 cells and measure 0.1 to 0.2 millimeters when they are in culture in our laboratory. While the risk is small, there are rare occasions when an embryo is damaged or lost. I fear the bill passed by the House leaves embryologists who are not required to have medical degrees at risk for criminal charges should we damage or lose an embryo during our daily work. Senator Peterson, similar feedback from other professionals working in this area?
Yes, from other professionals and parents who have really heavy hearts after what they've seen happen in the state of Alabama, worrying if our IVF services in Iowa are under threat. And those threats are real with the extremist policy pieces of legislation we've been seeing coming out of the Iowa State House this year.
Mm-hmm. And we want to mention before we end this segment again that Republican House lawmakers did not return requests to speak on this program about the so-called Baby Olivia bill, including its floor manager. Let's get in this other email from Terry in Bettendorf, who's listening. It is a mistake to allow students to be indoctrinated with videos that are not scientifically accurate. In addition, it is unfortunate to reduce the income limit for obtaining postnatal care. Why narrow the definition of how much income one can make and still get care? This isn't the direction we should be going. Let's support our women, Terry writes. We have about a minute left on this topic. Senator Peterson, any final words before we go there? I assume you agree with Terry and Bettendorf there.
Well, I absolutely agree. This is not the time to be contracting maternal health care services for Iowa. Just recently, we learned 61% of rural hospitals no longer have obstetrics care in our state. And so by shrinking the number of Iowans who have access to Medicaid services, we're actually putting more hospitals at risk of losing their labor and delivery departments.
Okay, we have to take another short break, and we'll be back in just a moment with Senator Janet Peterson, a Democrat of Des Moines. And then also when we come back, we'll be joined by another lawmaker, Representative Devin Wood, a Republican from Newmarket. And we'll go back to talking about the eligibility for postpartum care, extending that coverage, but also lowering the income ceiling for those eligible. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Back in a moment.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with more of River to River from IPR News, I'm Ben Kiefer with my co-host today, Katarina Sestarik, IPR's state government reporter, discussing proposals at the Iowa State House having to do with reproductive health. In this final section, we want to focus mainly on a proposal that would extend postpartum Medicaid coverage, but also limit eligibility. And we had you describe it at the start of the hour, Katarina. Tell us again, basically what this bill would do.
It's a proposal from Governor Kim Reynolds, and it would extend the duration of Medicaid coverage for pregnant women to a full year after giving birth. It's currently 2 months after giving birth, and Iowa would be one of the last states to do it. And the bill would also cut the eligibility by lowering the income ceiling significantly.
Mm-hmm. And we're also joined by another lawmaker in addition to Senator Janet Peterson, Democrat of Des Moines. We welcome Representative Devin Wood, a Republican from Newmarket, who is the floor manager for this postpartum Medicaid bill. Representative Wood, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
So, Representative Wood, why is extending the length of Medicaid coverage postpartum, you know, important to Republicans?
Absolutely. You know, we've seen studies, we've talked to, you know, parents, we've talked to providers, we've talked to a lot of folks in our medical community and folks that are impacted by coverage. And we have just seen that the statistics are absolutely, you know, out of the park when it comes to having that longer period of time for mom and baby to have that coverage that's, like you mentioned, going from that 60-day window to that year window. As a lot of parents know already, baby has a lot of checkups in that first year and a half, to make sure that they're hitting their check marks and their milestones and anything that needs to be addressed. And it's a great opportunity by increasing this coverage to 12 months to make sure that mom is healthy too. You know, mom can be her best self and her best for baby when we're making sure that her health concerns are also addressed. And knowing, you know, I've had a lot of friends who have had children, and I know that even sometimes the most standard delivery can have a lot of healing time and even other medical concerns that are exacerbated by that birth situation. And so this is a phenomenal opportunity to make sure that not only baby's healthy, but mom is too, and that she can, like I said, be the absolute best she can for baby.
And why, as part of the bill, our Republicans or the governor has proposed lowering the income eligibility, having some people who would currently qualify for coverage would no longer qualify. Why is that part of the bill?
Yeah, I would just note that this bill really gets to the root of moms and babies who absolutely need it most are going to be getting that full year of coverage as opposed to only 60 days. When you talk about the eligibility requirements, I know family of four is often talked about, and I brought some statistics to share with folks. When we talk about that family of four at the 375 mark that was the ceiling in this operating as we are now, that's a family of four in $117,000. When we talk about that 215 mark, again, moms and babies that absolutely need it most, that family of four is only making $67,000. So I think that correlation there, as I said, we're wanting to make sure that those folks that need it the most are the ones getting covered for that full year. And not to mention over the past couple years, when it comes to things like our moms program and other maternal health priorities, regional centers of excellence, which I know I was on last year to speak with you guys about. We've done some phenomenal things for moms, babies, families, and offering some resources. I think it's important to talk about that, when it comes to coverage, there's Medicaid, but there's also marketplace coverage. And we can talk about folks' options when it comes to that. It's important for us to note that we've provided a lot of phenomenal resources that some of these, families can take advantage of and can utilize in their communities already.
Senator Peterson, I know you've opposed changing the income cap for postpartum Medicaid, but why not kind of extend the coverage for the people who, have the lowest incomes and I guess let people with higher incomes access other options for health insurance?
Well, I believe that we should be taking steps forward and not taking steps backwards. When you cut the income eligibility, you cut off hundreds of pregnant Iowans from receiving insurance coverage through Medicaid for their pregnancies as well as hundreds of their babies. It also will cut them off of their automatic enrollment in the WIC program, which provides food and breastfeeding supports to those families. And, when we see so many services for maternal health care contracting across our state, now is not the time to be cutting services. We also see the governor touting the fact that we're sitting on a $2 billion surplus. So there are funds available to do the right thing. And we believe that the governor should not be cutting off service and care to hundreds of pregnant Iowans and their babies.
Representative Wood, is there any discussion among House Republicans about passing the bill with a different income cap than what the governor proposed, either keeping it the same or having it at a higher level than 215% of the federal poverty level?
Thanks for asking. We've actually talked about a lot of numbers when it comes to what that income eligibility looks like. And I think, as I previously stated, our most vulnerable folks in that in those windows are who we absolutely want to make sure gets that 12 months of care. So I think going forward with this 215 as the conversation is, again, like I've stated, making sure that those folks who absolutely need it most are going to be able to get a full 12 months, as opposed to like saying the 375 being at only 60 days. And this program, if it were to go through as proposed right now with that 215, is going to be a significant initial investment monetarily, and will continue to even out over the next couple of years to about the tune of $200,000 a year. So it will continue to be an investment for our moms and babies.
But it would be a lot smaller of an investment than if you had kept the federal poverty level income eligibility the same as current. I know you didn't propose the bill, the governor did, but my understanding that her point of view was that it should be approximately budget neutral with that.
Have you seen the latest fiscal note?
I have seen it, yeah.
Okay.
So it
just
would,
wanted to know, so yeah, that just, so, grandfathering program, that would actually be an initial investment of over $6 million.
Can you talk a little bit about the grandfathering that you just mentioned?
Yes, absolutely. So the federal government asks us to make sure that we are essentially not cutting anyone off that would be in the middle of that 60-day coverage. So it would be making sure that those folks who are currently in the middle of a 60-day coverage program would then be able to still receive that 12 months. So,
and I know I've heard, I covered a subcommittee hearing about this bill, and there were some people who were concerned that there's, you know, Iowans who, it may seem like they have a pretty good income, and they do have a pretty good income, but they're working for a small business who that doesn't offer health insurance, for example. A normal birth costs thousands of dollars. That's just with no complications, thousands of dollars, even with health insurance. So what, you know, I guess what options are there for people who now would fall into that gap?
Absolutely. I would encourage anyone who's wanting to know their options of coverage, whether it be through a Medicaid program or otherwise, to look into marketplace coverage. You know, I'm a work for a small business, if you will. I have a family farm that I work for. We don't have health insurance coverage through that. And just like many Americans and many Iowans, I've gone through the marketplace coverage, answered the very simple questions, and been able to see all of my options that were in front of me. And I would encourage anybody who's questioning what's available to them to go through that program.
Senator Peterson?
The problem with that is that pregnancy is not a qualifying event to secure your health insurance through the Affordable Care Act if you become pregnant outside of the enrollment window. So we would see potentially pregnant Iowa families not having access to finding health insurance and then having to foot the bill without affordable care insurance.
And I guess also just looking at, you know, what's coming up in the House for debate, do you think this bill will be getting a vote in the House soon, or what's kind of the future of that?
Absolutely. Appreciate that question. We've had a lot of conversations amongst, you know, our House Republicans, Democrats as a whole, in committee and whatnot, and we were wanting to make sure that we had the most accurate information, and I know that latest fiscal note actually came out on the day that we were originally supposed to debate, so we wanted to you know, take a little time to make sure that we were presenting accurate information to folks on the floor. So I would anticipate having a conversation about when it could come up, maybe yet today, and talking with leadership. And I'm certainly advocating for it. I mean, it's absolutely critical that we extend this to 12 months for our moms and babies. I'm absolutely jazzed up about it. So to be providing that coverage. So I don't want to speculate a date, but I know that I'll be advocating for it to come up as soon as we can.
If you just joined us, the final 5 minutes of our Legislative Monday session today, focusing on proposed changes to laws concerning reproductive health. Still with us, Senator Janet Peterson, Democrat of Des Moines, Representative Devin Wood, Republican from New Market here. And we have a bit of extra time, Katarina. A few words from our guests about the governor's birth control bill, which Representative Wood has been floor manager for. Introduce us to this bill. What's the proposal here?
Governor Kim Reynolds has proposed for several years now to let people get birth control directly from a pharmacist without first getting a prescription from a doctor. So it's kind of referred to as behind-the-counter birth control. And I was wondering, Representative Wood, since that bill has been, I think you had it considered in the Health and Human Services Committee again this year. Is that going to come up for a vote this year in the House?
We're still having conversations amongst my colleagues of you know, both sides on what final, I guess, version that they would like to see. I've heard from some folks versus that initial proposal that we see right now, possibly wanting to see see a doctor, you know, come into the conversation a little bit sooner, but also acknowledging that, you know, with our wait times and some of our provider shortage areas, that initial, you know, dispensing, as you mentioned, I appreciate the behind the counter reference, by the way. I know it's often misrepresented as over the counter, which can get kind of confusing. I would say that, you know, we've had a lot of good conversations, and I'm still operating as if that could come up, you know, in the next couple of days. We've had several conversations about what that adjustment period could look like. I know the initial version had it after that what was it, 27 months of dispensing. I think we're looking at more like a year's worth of dispensing and having that doctor conversation come into play a little sooner there, and working on some fine-tuning pieces that different colleagues would like to see as well. So,
and Senator Peterson, I know this has had bipartisan support in the Senate before. So you think the Senate would take it up again if the House passed it?
Well, the Senate actually passed it when Democrats were in control back about 10 years ago. So I know Senate Democrats are interested in making sure Iowans have better access to family planning services and also restoring the Iowa Family Planning Program that Republicans took away when they first took over control of the State House.
And I do wonder, in terms of overall birth control access, I know an actual over-the-counter birth control is going to be available very soon after the FDA approved it. So, Representative Wood, you know, how much do you think this bill, if it becomes law, would impact access to birth control for Iowans?
Well, I'd just say, you know, we have a couple different options right now for even getting that doctor's appointment version that is what we have to go through right now. You know, you can make an in-person appointment, go visit with our telehealth services being what they are. I can pull up a Zoom conference with a doctor and be prescribed something that's mailed to my house within the matter of 24 to 48 hours. And I would just say that this is an absolute key piece for someone who, you know, wants to get an appointment in person, wants to talk about options, and feels that in-person version of a conversation is incredibly important to them. I know personally, I have a phenomenal relationship with my pharmacist, and they're someone who is a vital resource in our healthcare community. And so I personally know that, you know, if I were faced with an option to do something in person, but my wait time was going to be such that I would possibly lose a continuity of care that I've been receiving, I would absolutely want to take advantage of a safe, in-person, confidential conversation with somebody who knows my healthcare, you know, background intimately, and is very, you know, much wanting to see me be happy, healthy, and safe. So I think that this has a wonderful impact in that sense, that if somebody's feeling that you know, wait time for that doctor's appointment in the provider's office could be a little more lengthy, but they want that in-person touch. They want that in-person, you know, conversation to happen face-to-face. Feels a little more comfortable for a lot of folks. Then this would absolutely be a viable option for them to use. And I think that many folks would appreciate that.
And Senator Peterson, we're running out of time, but, you know, what are your thoughts on just how much that birth control proposal would affect birth control access for Iowans?
Well, we absolutely need something to help Iowans access birth control, because the original bill that took away the Iowa Family Planning Program banned thousands of women from seeing the provider of their choice to get their family planning services. So I know that there are a lot of Iowans struggling to access family planning.
Okay. Thank you very much for this discussion. Our hour has come to an end. Senator Janet Peterson, Democrat of Des Moines, Representative Devin Wood, Republican from Newmarket, thank you so much for coming into the State House Law Library with Katarina to discuss these issues. We appreciate it. And thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. And thanks on behalf of my co-host, Katarina Sestaric. Thanks for joining us today. Tomorrow on this program, we'll hear two different issues discussed. We'll hear from youth involved in town halls about concerns that matter to the youth in our state. Some of those concerns, violence in schools, also the opportunity gap. Also, in the second part of our program tomorrow, wildfire photographer Kathy Greer will be here. We'll talk about her exhibition, Facing the Inferno. We'll also discuss the impact of wildfire smoke on respiratory infections. That's tomorrow on this program. Today's program produced by Samantha McIntosh with support from John Pemble, Danny Geer, and Caitlin Troutman. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.